Hey, look what we have found. A big sound in a small town. Far away from the bright lights. They're making music every night. Discover what is all around. A big sound.
A big sound.
Listening to Big Sound Small Town with Sandy Carlton.
We're good.
Hi, my name's Brody Cobb. I own Cobb Guitars out of Richland, Georgia. And I repair and build guitars. And I love doing it. And I would love to be able to help you achieve your musical dream with your instrument.
There you go. All right, for my listeners, give them a idea of where you're located. I know it's South Georgia. So where's the big city?
So Richland is a pretty small town, and we're located about, I'd say about 35 miles south of Columbus, Georgia, and about 45 miles north of Albany. So we're right on the southwest part of Georgia, about midway.
Yeah. I know that area. If they're ever looking to need places to put people, there's a lot of land there.
Absolutely. We're very rich in farmland and hunting land and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. So, all right, let's talk about how did you become a guitar builder? I like builders. I've had builders on the podcast several times, and I admire their work. Being a lifelong guitarist, you know, it's near and dear to me. So how did you get started doing this?
So it's a funny story, really. So I've been playing guitar since I was 6 years old.
Right.
And about 13 years ago, I had a good friend of mine from North Carolina, and he may have been on your show before. His name's Derek McCoy.
Yeah, I know Derek very, very well. In fact, that was my first association with one of your guitars.
Nice. Yeah, Derek's like my brother. I love the guy, and I wish he lived closer or I lived closer to him. But he was down, and at that time, I didn't even own a pair of pliers. Like, it was totally not something I ever envisioned myself doing. And he was playing one of my guitars, and I was like, man, this thing just doesn't sound right. It doesn't play right. I need to see about getting it fixed. And he made a recommendation. He said, you need to look up this guy, Dan Earlywine. He writes books and he's the guy. So I went on the internet and bought his book and just, I don't know. It was like the path was open for me. I became obsessed with it. Guitar setup. And I sold a truck I had. I had a little Mazda truck and I sold it for $1,600 and made the investment and bought tools because, again, I didn't even own a screwdriver.
Wow. That is amazing.
For sure. Now, I think the advantage I had, though, is because I've been a guitar player all my life, I sort of know what a guitar should feel like and sound like.
Right.
And if I don't, I probably should have quit years ago.
Right. This is true. Yeah, this is true. And I will back that up by saying, if you knew Derek McCoy and was doing any playing around Derek, then obviously you're a pretty good guitarist too.
Oh, Derek is one of the best.
Yeah, Derek is.
He really is.
But
yeah, that's basically how I got started. I didn't start a business at first. I just, word kind of got out and other guitar players were coming to see me and they were like, man, can you set my guitar up? And then I would give it back to them and they'd be like, oh, wow, this is different.
Right.
You know? And then they would tell people, and before too long, I told my wife, I was like, you know, I need to try to do something with this. And lo and behold, I've done something with it.
Was it a hard decision? I mean, I take it this is pretty much what you do now, right?
It is, and it wasn't a hard decision. as with any business venture, there are risks and things. And I'll be honest, you know, I don't, I'm not going to get rich doing this, but I don't view richness in terms of just monetary gain. I know many people who work 9-to-5 jobs who make 1,000 times more money than I ever do, but they hate it. And yeah. See, I don't. I love what I do.
There's not enough of that in the world.
Right.
You know, well, from the get-go, really, if music or any facet of music that you do, if you do it for the money, you're going to spend your life badly disappointed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But by the same token, the richness that you take away from it, people who don't do that do not understand it.
And that's true. I am blessed. I have the best customers that anyone could ever hope for. And they've become like family to me. That's the great thing. Through this business, I've gained mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, people that I can call right now and would have my back,
sure.
You know, no questions asked. So that it's rewarded me more than I could ever hope to, you know, pay back.
That's great. Actually, I have had two people on my show that you've built guitars for. The other one is Jacob Trammell.
Oh, I love Jacob. He's like a brother to me.
Yeah. He has a guy who was his roommate in college who, I play music with some, and I played with Jacob with him, Luke Kaiser.
Yeah, Luke. I just set up a vintage guitar for him.
Really?
Oh yeah. Well, Jacob, I brought it down and I got it set up and fixed for him, and I think he's very happy with it.
Well, you know, Luke, if you're hearing this, and you probably will, your guitars did need sitting up a bit. The first one he pulled out when he did the podcast, and the first one he pulled out, I swear the strings hadn't been changed on it, maybe since he had it.
Yeah, you know, that's part of it. There's never a one size fits all. I've read that the great Eddie Van Halen used to hate new strings. He loved them when they were old and about to the point of dead.
Well, spending a lot of my life being a bass player, you know, I don't like change strings. You can play a bass strings forever.
Oh, and it's the same with nylon string guitars. True. I always tell people, look, when they have stretched themselves out, don't change them. Keep them on there until you just hate them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that also. It's So did you start your building and repairing? Did that start mostly with electric guitars?
It did. It was just simple setups to start with. I was scared of frets and things like that, but eventually, as with all things, you just sort of, you know, if you love something, you just study it and study it. And I became obsessed. Like, I bought probably $1,000 worth of DVDs, video. Right. That's one of the things that I guess is a blessing and a curse about myself is if I get interested in something, I become just obsessed with it. That's the way my mind works.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think that it's a good thing in a lot of ways, and and then I started doing fret work and all sorts of other cool things for guitars, and it's the coolest process ever. It's a lot of fun, and you know, again, another perk of the job is I've gotten to play pretty much every guitar and amp that I've ever dreamed of.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, I could see that would be a real perk of it.
That is a perk of it.
Do you remember about the first guitar that you built?
Oh yes, absolutely. My friend Marianne Harmon bought that guitar for her daughter, and unfortunately they had a house fire and everything burned up. Yeah, it's just one of those things, but I remember the first acoustic I built, and it's funny because I had been building electric guitars, and from an engineering standpoint, electric guitars are not difficult to build.
Right.
Like a Strat style or Tele style guitar is very, you know, it's not rocket science.
Right.
The little details like fretwork, those can be, you know, kind of challenging if you don't know what you're doing, but building an acoustic is a totally different beast.
Oh yeah, I know it, that that's the case.
I mean, you're dealing with wood, you know, very thin veneer type wood, and a lot of things can go wrong. And let me tell you, a lot of things have gone wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is a trial and error, isn't it? I mean, basically.
It is, and I'm one of those guys, again, I have to learn the hard way.
Sure.
So, you know, when you've spent $300 on a 5A quilt piece of maple, and then your router table wasn't set up quite right, and it throws it across the room and ruins it, you know, you'll cry.
Yeah, you will. Yeah.
You'll cry. You'll throw things. I've shoved chisels through my hands by accident. So when I say blood, sweat, and tears, by God, I mean blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing to hear, though. I mean, it actually says that I've earned my craft, you know, my reputation as a craft builder. So.
Absolutely. And that's all part of the journey of it. I mean, the mistakes are going to be made, and you just sort of learn from it. And if you're dedicated, you'll pull yourself together and keep on trucking.
Well, and I think that is the way. I think that's just a life statement there. You know, you're going to make mistakes in life. It's not, you know, that's how you get to the other side of it, is through your mistakes.
That's true. And, you know, building guitars has taught me a lot about life. I mean, I know that I can wax on philosophical all day about these things, but I've often thought about writing sort of a book about things that guitar building has taught me about life.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that there's a zen to it, you know?
It is.
I can see that. There's a lot of, you're bringing something to life. You kind of watch that life grow as you do it. It's a beautiful part of building anything, but particularly guitars.
Well, you know, and in one of the things you learn early on that is of, you know, pivotal importance in guitar building is the great center line. And that's, you know, with any building or anything you have. And I didn't know these things. I had to read these things and learn them on my own. But when you discover that everything has to be on center, or else it won't be in line. I mean, there's so many lessons in that.
There is so many lessons in that. Yes, it is.
And that's just one of many. Again, this is just such an incredible, I'm blessed to be able to do this stuff.
Do you have woods that you like better for acoustics than others?
I do. And the lineup changes a lot because you'll always experiment and try to find what works for you. But I love like walnut. I love rosewood, spruces, mahogany. Mahogany is probably one of the foremost woods in guitar building. Mahogany is a stable wood. It's beautiful.
It is.
There are so many great ones. Koa. I built an electric guitar for a customer who actually flew out to Hawaii. And while he was out there, he bought Koa from the island.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was a nerve-wracking build, because anytime a customer brings you wood like Jacob Trammell and says, will you build a guitar for me? That's nerve-wracking because, again, you know, I don't care how long you've been in this business, you're going to make mistakes.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that would have to be very nerve-wracking. It's like, I don't know that I actually have replacement for this wood either, you know?
Absolutely. And when it's a $300-$400 piece of wood, or a piece of wood that you inherited from your granddad, I told Jacob when he brought the wood over, I was like, Jacob, I love you. and I'm going to try my hardest not to make any mistakes, because this wood, but working with someone like him is a dream.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I worked my first time with him on a job with Luke, and it was he was easy to work with. And at my age, I have worked with so many musicians, and I love it when you get a young musician that you can come in, huge age difference in us, and it flowed like, you know, it was great. I mean, he was easy to work with and a lot of fun to boot.
You know, and that's another thing, too, you being a musician, myself and things, we both know that musicians can be peculiar sometimes. That's putting it very nicely.
You're being very kind there.
I'm being very kind. They can be very, They can be very peculiar and buttholish.
Yeah, they can. Yeah, they can.
That's a Greek word, buttholish, I think.
I like that Greek word, yeah.
Sure. But I'll tell you, too, I have been blessed in this because I have 99.999% of my customers have been the greatest people you could ever hope to meet.
Yeah, that's great.
And you will, in any business, you'll have one or two in your lifetime, if you're lucky, only one or two, that you just couldn't really de-haul with.
Sure.
But that's just human nature. You're going to have that.
It is. And that's a good attitude to have. I think attitude with about anything you do is a large portion of your success.
100%.
You know, it's, I actually got to play Jacob's guitar too. It's, that is a chunk of wood. It's a nice guitar.
Yes. Yes. It was, over 100-year-old chestnut and cherry wood.
Yeah. I love the look of it. It looks great.
Oh, I love that old world aesthetic look. I don't, yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't really like tabletop looking guitars, right. The ones that are buffed up to a mirror gloss. And yeah. I mean, those are cool. I've played them all my life, but to me, they just feel like a factory guitar, which there's nothing wrong with factory guitars.
I agree.
But I like them more when they have character to them.
Sure.
Like I will, you know, it's funny. I actually use woods that any builders would just scoff at and throw in the trash.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I do understand that because I believe that the scars of life mean more than the pristine, never scarred life. I mean, you've lived life. That's living life.
That's exactly right. And it's when you look at a piece of wood and it has character, it has, you know, what some consider defects are not, they don't affect the sound really of the guitar.
Yeah.
It's just that a lot of people, when they buy a guitar, they especially people who maybe would have sort of a cork sniffing kind of attitude.
Sure,
they
would, that's a good way to put it.
And again, there's nothing wrong with that. This is all subjective. I usually would tell people like that, you don't really want to buy my guitar.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Go get a Martin or a Taylor or all the other amazing guitars that are out there. Because again, I like character.
I do too. I actually have seen several of your pictures of several of your reclaimed lumber ones. You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's sure. Just a wonderful thing. It's funny. There's a difference between the character in it and the manufactured distress. You know,
sure.
It's not Absolutely. The same. It's not the same.
No, it really isn't. I have customers sometimes that will ask me to relic their guitars, and right. I just laugh at them. I'm like, no way, I'm not doing
yeah,
that.
I see as a builder where that would almost hurt your heart to distress something like that.
Yeah. Well, to me also, like, you know, I have no qualms with people who like those things, but
right.
When Stevie Ray Vaughan's guitar looked the way it did, it looked that way because he played bars
exactly.
And had beards thrown at
sure.
him. And, you know, it's just one of those things. And I just, to me, distressing a guitar just isn't, I don't feel right doing it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you have to earn those distresses.
Yeah, I mean, all my guitars in my house that have distress is because one of my kids ran up
sure.
and stuck a pseudo in the pickup or kicked it over or something.
Sure, I mean, I my guitars, that's what I tell him. I don't have to get someone to relic them. If I own them at some point, that's just going to happen because I don't believe in shoving them under the bed and not using them.
No, well, and also, too, if you look at the most collectible guitars, you know, like if you look at Joe Bonamassa's collection and stuff like that, I mean, he doesn't own really pristine-looking guitars.
No,
I mean, he
doesn't.
They're cragged, and when he gets them, he sends them to his luthier, and they refret them, and they make them players because a guitar was made to be played.
Sure.
Well, they're not furniture.
You know, also guitar, from my viewpoint, and that's the reason I'm saying this to you, is they're always a work of, they grow too with age, particularly acoustic guitars as they open up.
100%.
And you know, there's some fabulous guitars that's had cracks fixed and cleated and all. I mean, I think the Tony Rice guitar had seven cleats in it, you know.
Sure.
And
you can't expect a piece of wood that you're playing, you're taking it to different climates.
True.
You know, again, you're playing it one day in a dry place and next in a wet. Wood swells, it breathes, sure. It contracts.
Yeah.
Even the great legend like Tony Rice, I assure you that he had problems with his instruments because sure. That's the way it works.
Yeah, I mean it really is. And then these days that I guess a whole different side of building. Do you when you build, do you put electronics in your guitars for your acoustic guitars?
I do, and I'll tell you, I discovered years ago, because I don't prefer under saddle pickups in my guitars, because we as builders a lot of times take extra care to make sure that the bridge saddle fits right and
exactly.
That there's no gaps. And when you put a little metal piece under there, you know, or the wire mesh that comes with a lot of those, I feel that it changes the acoustic sound of the guitar naturally.
I think you have a good case for that. Yeah, I believe you're right.
I've heard it myself, and again, it's subjective. One man hears something, another don't. But I tend to prefer the under the pickups, like the K&K pickups, sure. Where the it mounts under the bridge plate, so you're getting the actual acoustic sound of the guitar minus adding all these things under the saddle and stuff. That's just my personal preference.
Yeah, I was getting ready to ask you if you had a preference in acoustic pickups.
Yeah, I love the K&K stuff. I read something recently that distressed me, and I hope it's not true, but I read somewhere where they were having troubles or something, and I hope if they go out of business that I'm able to find a suitable replacement.
Sure. Yeah. That would be bad.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm sure there are other makers out there that have the same style. Surely they weren't the first ones to think of it.
Yeah, probably not. Or someone would even, it's a copycat world, copycat their technology, and we just have a better business model about it. We're, possibly.
Right.
Well,
absolutely.
Now, then with electric guitars, the pickups are a whole different. There's a lot of different choices there compared to.
I tell customers nowadays, look, if you can't find the sound you're looking for now, these days,
right.
It don't exist.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's so many fine electric pickups, manufacturers that, if you're right. If you can't find the sound you want, it's probably not there.
Everything is so readily available. Back in the day, if you had a pickup go out, that was serious business. Yeah. You had to locate a manufacturer and all that.
Right.
And things. But nowadays, they even have quick connect systems where you can literally swap the pickup yourself in less than 5 minutes.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and so we're in the golden age of guitar gear and things like that. Now, it's a double-edged sword because on one hand, the guitar is really not as mainstream now as it once was.
Well, this is true. It is. It isn't.
It really isn't. But on the other hand, you can now get quality stuff for not a whole lot of money.
True. This is true. But you think about the guitar, and sometimes music is being done and you think there's not a guitar in there. We take the Motown stuff, and it was actually loaded with guitar. It just wasn't the, just wasn't the biggest upfront instrument.
Yeah. We really were blessed with, with the legends that we have and things like that. But having said that, you can go now on TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram and find guitar players that technically can do things that heroes couldn't even do.
I agree. And now I had to drop the needle on the record over and over until I wore a groove to learn something. And you can go on YouTube and, find it and have it learned by this afternoon.
It's crazy. And that's one of if I would at 13 years old, when I was in my bedroom trying to decipher Eddie Van Halen licks, now you go on YouTube, and in many cases, the artists themselves will teach their...
I agree.
And it's crazy. Man, I would have killed, metaphorically speaking, to have that when I was a teen, you know?
When I was trying to figure out open tunings, that was just a nightmare for me as a kid. Yeah. You knew it wasn't the standard tuning, even though you could find the chords, you knew that wasn't right.
And, right.
And it was like, oh, and then nowadays, you know, you can get a whole tutorial on how to play in any open key you want. So
one good thing about that, though, and I feel like it probably made you a better musician, is the struggle of finding all that stuff when you're younger develops your ear in a way that think a lot of players nowadays that just learn from tab books and things, they're really doing themselves a disservice.
You know, another thing I've noticed, I deal with a lot of young musicians because I like to find young musicians and bring them to people's attention.
Sure.
Rhythm, they're not learning rhythm playing at all.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they can play a riff that I couldn't play, but then when it's time for me to play mine, they're just terrible rhythm players.
And, you know, there's a lot to be said there. I remember coming up, you know, when you discover like Slash and all the greats, you sort of become obsessed with lead guitar. And that happened to me. There was about 2-year period where, you know, I just wanted to burn scales and be as fast as I could possibly be. And again, you set in with the local blues band and they're looking at you, you know, sure, you got chops, but your rhythm is terrible.
Yeah. No pocket to your playing, you know. It's like support. Yeah.
It's so much more important. But you can't tell a young musician that because they want to burn, you know, and I get it. I totally get it. I used to give guitar lessons, and anytime I would, you know, have a young male student typically, and they wanted to just learn how to 8-finger tap or, you know, be the next Steve Vai. And I would always say, that's cool. But learn some other stuff too, you know?
Well, you know, I one of the things I always try to point out to them is most everyone that can really shred, they can play rhythm too.
Oh, they're some of the best rhythm players on the planet.
Oh, yeah, they are. I mean, I've seen, and I'm not really, I would not tell you that I'm a huge John Mayer fan, but
I love him.
But I watched him with the Grateful Dead.
Yes.
And he was great. I mean, He played kind of true to Jerry, and he was a great supporting guitarist. I mean,
he's amazing.
You know,
he gets a lot of hate, and I understand it because no man should be that pretty play guitar that good, sing that good.
Yeah,
you know, look, I get it. I don't like the guy. I love him, but I also don't like him because he's got it all.
Sure, he does.
Know?
Oh yeah,
save some for the rest of us, pal.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, my other one that I feel that way about too is Derek Trucks. You should not be able to play slide. I play slide. I played slide all my life, but
I suck at it. I'm terrible.
I'm telling you, to play it like him is.
Now Derek, he isn't as pretty as John Mayer.
No, he's not.
But no, he definitely ain't. But he is incredible. His slide playing is unbelievable. There's another cat out of Louisiana named Sonny Landreth.
Oh, yeah, his is too, yeah.
Oh, good Lord, Sonny Landreth. Man, he plays behind the slide.
Yeah, he does.
And just all this crazy stuff. And I'm like, listen, when I put a slide on, please leave the room.
Well, mine is as long as I concentrate and I get everything lined up, you know, with slide, you can get your slide crooked and your intonation has just gone all to hell. You know,
I just can't, again, the way my hands work, it doesn't work for that. It's like the guys that do do you remember the cat that played with the guitar in his lap? He was at Roadhouse.
Jeff Healy.
Jeff Healy.
Yeah.
I tried that one time and literally it was the worst sounding thing you've ever heard.
That's kind of been my thing too. When I've played lap steel too, a good bit, it's like, this is, you know, I don't know which is worse, being able to look down and see the frets easily in your lap,
it doesn't work. It doesn't work for me. And you know, and it's funny too, guitar setup wise, slide players tend to prefer a higher action.
They do. Yeah.
So you have to have a guitar that is sort of set up if you, you know, if you really want to, you know, do the Derek Trucks or those, you know, Landry thing.
And I think their string gauges are higher too. I mean, I think they're, you know,
oh, yes.
I think they are on guitars that, I mean, there's some stress when you start taking things to, you know, Little Feet. I saw where Lowell George played in an open A. You know, I'd have to distress that guitar all to pieces.
Oh, sure. And you know, and that one of the things about my own builds, and I'm not trying to toot my horn or something, I don't really like thin necks.
Yeah.
I think that I like a little meat on them because of that very thing. Stability-wise, a very thin neck just can't handle the stresses of, you know, even the ones that I have noticed this. Now, you know, people may disagree with me, and that's fine. But I have noticed that even the necks that have the reinforcement in them that are really thin.
Yeah.
I've owned a few guitars that had the carbon fiber rods and all that. And even those felt like a snake in my hand when I would do certain things. So I tend to carve them a little thicker than normal.
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem. You know, you look at switching the, and this is kind of subjective too, but you take a, switching just from a Gibson neck to a Fender neck is a little bit of shock when you go, but if you've been doing one of them longer than the other, you know, it's like, wow, this is a little wider and a little different, but you know.
Well, the thing is too, something you have to, and I've demonstrated this to many players throughout the years. A lot of players are scared of a big neck because they will say, quote unquote, oh, it doesn't play fast. Well, it really doesn't have much to do with that. What makes a neck play fast, quote unquote, is typically the action set up on it, you know, the string relative to the frets and the neck curvature. See, if you take a Gibson neck, a traditionally fast neck, and you have a lot of relief in it, it's going to play muddy.
Yeah, this is true.
It's going to feel different. And when you take a thicker neck, low action, the fret works right and all that, it's going to play fast. I mean, Yngwie Malmsteen, it really don't get too much faster than that guy.
No.
The necks on his guitars are pretty thick.
Well, I mean, you know, my reference point has some of the early guitars I had to start off with, everything I've ever played since those early days had a fast neck. I mean, you know, I had some bad pawn shop guitars to start off with.
Oh, that's yes, sir.
You know, and the actions were so high that I think that's what forced me to play slide. Is it was just hard to play on some of those necks before I ever got. That was in my developing stages before I ever had a chance to get a real guitar, basically, you know, I do like the old style, Gibson necks. I mean, old style Fender necks on acoustic guitars, the 30s style where they were a little thicker.
Yes, absolutely. Those are very stable and they're very toneful.
They are very toneful. I agree.
Yeah, they are. I think a lot of the tone comes from the neck. I think if you have a neck that absorbs sound, it's not going to sound that good. But if you have a neck that projects, and again, I'm sort of, when you start talking like this, it almost sounds like Black Magic, you know.
Yeah.
But and it's all subjective and personal. But many musicians have agreed with me when we talk about this stuff. A lot of the tone does come from the neck of a guitar.
Yeah. I mean,
that's where your fingers are pressing down.
True.
I've done fret jobs on guitars before where it sort of sounded dead before, and then I refret it and get everything right, and all of a sudden the guitar is alive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, guitars are like people. You get a little age on, you know, they get beat up a bit, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, when people buy my acoustic guitars, I always tell them, I say, this is the worst this guitar is ever going to sound.
Oh, yeah, it's going to get better. I agree with that now. Now, the talk about neck resets. Do you do those?
Yeah, I have done them before. I tend to shy away from a lot of them now because for two reasons. The first being that a lot of times guys will bring you a guitar that's worth $200, mm-hmm. and it's just not worth putting about, you know, $400 sure. into a guitar like that. So right. I tend to say, you know, listen, unless you absolutely want me to do this, it's not very worth your time. Right. And I pride myself on being an honest repairman.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, no, I think that in any industry, you need to have integrity and you need to be honest.
That's the keys to successful businesses, generally.
It really has. And listen, it's cost me money throughout the years, but I don't care about that. You know, the internet's forever. If you rip somebody off and you're a bad businessman, people are going to know.
Yeah, they will.
And that's perfect. I love that.
Word gets around fast these days. I mean, you know.
Oh, 100. And it should. You know, man, listen, anyone, I know you've lived long enough. You've been ripped off before, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Absolutely. It is a terrible feeling.
Sure. It is a horrible feeling. You know?
It's a bad feeling. And in this industry, like every industry, you just got to be careful. You got to really, you know, I say get to know your local guitar repair man and become friends with him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Well, my local guy I played with him forever. So, I mean, so I know, you know, I know he's going to be great for me. That is one good thing, you know, I also know his limitations too, you know.
Oh, bingo. And you have to be able to communicate that with somebody. Like, I don't like to do finish repair. Right. I gave up a while back. And the reason why is because I'm just not very good at that.
Well, it's hard to match that up. I mean,
it is. And if someone is so finicky as to a dent bothers them in their guitar,
right.
Believe me, they're not going to be happy with that repair unless it looks pristine.
Right.
And there are limitations in all that, you know?
Sure. And I think everybody has strengths and weaknesses.
Yes.
And I know builders who send both their acoustics and electrics off to be finished.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to have a dedicated setup for that kind of thing. Luckily for me, I'm able to do my own finish work.
Good.
But at the same time, I can understand where a builder has limited space and because you've got to have a whole setup. And in some sure. states, you've got to have, you know, licensing for all that. And I get where it would just be cheaper to send it to a guy and give him a couple $100.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is a whole different operation too, really. I mean,
it is.
I mean, finishing is totally really different than building.
It is.
You know, they're almost two different skill sets.
Yeah. And again, you know, going back to just being honest with your customers, I would, you know, I am more comfortable these days turning down a job than I was before. Because, you know, when you're younger and chipper, you want to shoot for the stars kind of thing. But as the years pass, I'm more comfortable passing something off to someone else if I think that they can do a better job.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and that's good business also. I mean,
sure.
There again, it's knowing what you do well and maybe what someone else does well.
Yeah, and you know, there are so many magicians in this field. I follow men and women on my Facebook that are the only thing I know to say is that they sold their soul to rock and roll or something. They are incredible builders.
Sure.
They can do things with wood that I just can't do.
right. And yeah, but I mean, that being said, there's plenty to go around. I mean,
sure. Absolutely.
You know,
to be self-abasing or anything. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm just inspired every day. Like I hear musicians that can play things I can. It inspires me when I see builders, you know, building the Mona Lisa of guitars, it really inspires me.
Sure. And I can understand that. I mean, respect within the fields of what you do. No matter how good you are at anything, there's always somebody going to be better.
I mean, man, Listen, if you ever feel good about yourself, just go on YouTube.
I agree. I totally agree. One time I felt really good about myself as a songwriter. I went to Kerrville, Texas, and it was like, oh, my God, everybody here is light years ahead of me and better than me.
But see, that's the eternal thing that you learn. I mean, it's a journey, and everybody's journey is different. That's why I always, when I put my little guitar videos on Facebook,
right,
and people would say, oh, man, you're the best ever. I always feel stupid when they say that. I'm like, please don't say that.
I do understand that. But it is nice to get those compliments like that.
Sure.
You know, I mean, You just take them for what they're worth. I take it and you know, it's you take your compliments, even if you know sometimes that really the people are not that knowledgeable. But if it works for them, then that's great. If you're the greatest builder to them and they believe that, so be it. You know, that's a wonderful thing.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it. And that's what, you know, that's the whole beauty of everything. I think attitude is pretty much everything.
Yeah, it is.
I never want to get to a point to where I think highly of myself, because you want to let the Bible says, let the lips of others praise you, not your own.
I have never known really a smart person who had to tell you that they were smart, or a talented person that has to tell you how talented they are.
Absolutely not. Yes. and that to me is when I meet somebody, if they keep tooting their own horn, the first thing I always think is, buddy, you're too insecure. Yeah, you let exactly. all that go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think when I hear that, it's like, I'm missing something here. I know I am. I mean, I won't take you at your word, but I'm sure I'm missing something here.
That's right. Yeah, it's just, you know, we live in a beautifully chaotic world, and there's tons of inspiration out there. I watched the other day. I saw this young lady. I don't think she was no more than a teenager. She was on YouTube, and she was playing classical guitar pieces, Paganini, and some other stuff.
Right.
I don't know how her fingers got that fast.
You just don't know. You just never know about that stuff. I also see some of the most unassuming people who turn out to be fabulous at whatever it is that they do. And you would look at this person and go, really? That's who that is?
That's right.
You know,
and I think that's the blessing of the internet now too, is that, you know, maybe around Eddie Van Halen's heyday of 78, there were other guys who had just as much talent or whatever, but you never knew them.
No, you didn't. And that is kind of like, I mean, it is a blessing and a curse. These days, you know things that you didn't know back then. And sometimes I'm not 100% certain that's great. I mean, it was great.
Right.
Like when you thought Eddie Van Halen was the only one doing that, you know?
Right.
But now you have to say he did it at a very high level.
Absolutely. I've always been one of those people too, where I like to know how the magician did his trick.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But I also, there's a kid part of me that always wants everything to remain a mystery, because once you have it figured out, there's no more magic.
Well, that's true. And it does. And that's a thing about meeting your heroes too. Sometimes it's like, or people that you really thought highly of, and then you go, oh man. And it kind of taints what they've done, you know?
Yes, Lord. There's a lot of times where you'll love a musician and then they open their mouth on either politics or something stupid. Sure. And you're like, oh no.
Oh no. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. You're one of those people. Yeah. And I think a lot of times it's just best to remain silent on stuff. But again, I mean, it's, you know, people can do what they wish.
I've also mm-hmm. dealt with a lot of musicians who are, you know, fairly famous, and, you know, I mean, I know you can catch them on bad days.
Sure.
I mean, the majority of them are okay. I mean, there again, you probably are like I am. The majority of people I like and feel comfortable with are normally involved in music somehow.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
I mean, people don't understand sometimes the way musicians are.
We're a different group.
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt.
A lot of us are ADHD. A lot of us have quirks. And lucky for me, you know, I'm probably the most easygoing fellow you'll ever meet in your life.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way.
You really can't offend me that much because I don't really think much about that kind of thing. So I can tend to navigate complex personalities, so to say.
Sure. Well,
but
you know, I'm probably better with difficult and strange people than I am with quote normal person. You know, I mean,
yeah, for sure. What is normal?
I don't know, but generally people that people have trouble with, I don't really have that big a problem with. I don't know. Maybe it's because I've been a musician all my life, and I've been around them, and I've been around artists, and I've been around writers. So, you know, maybe everyone else just, you know, these people seem normal to me.
I've often viewed people as spices, not in a Hannibal Lecter type way, but as spices. Like, you'll have some people that are your just bread and butter. They're salt and pepper. You know, they're the salt of the earth people. But you'll also have some people that are horseradish.
Yeah, well, I like that analogy a lot. I like that.
Yeah, I came up with that years ago, and you are welcome to have it.
Well, you know, you might see it in a song somewhere because, you know, that's what I do, but I will give you credit for it.
Well, however you want to do it. But yeah, it's true. And some people, you know, some people are healthy for you in doses, and some people ain't. And you just sort of, as you get older, you gain wisdom. You just learn to, hopefully, you learn to navigate through all that stuff. Yeah. And so.
Yeah. It's, and also you catch people, I think, sometimes at different stages in their lives where they've, you know, you know, people can change and be different people. You know, you just never know.
Well, that, and we were at church last night, and we were reading the verse, you know, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy.
Right.
I love that verse. You know, I'm not trying to be religious or biblical or anything. I was just, you know, I thought about that because you're right. We do meet people at separate stages of their life. And I would hope that during my bad stages that people sort of would extend me grace and mercy.
Sure. Well, I think,
you know, and that's,
I do think, forgiveness is about the finest human quality that anyone can ever extend to you as a person.
Oh man. That you just said a mouthful there.
I mean, I think of all the gifts that you could be given as a human being and have been in places where I have done stuff that I knew wasn't good or right.
100%.
And then someone forgive you because they don't have to, you know, but when someone does, you know, that's almost the best gift anyone can give you, period.
It's the best feeling ever. And it also, it's inspiring because I'm one of those people, and you're probably the same way. If you do something to hurt someone, you want to make it right.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I do. There's people that don't, though. I mean, there's some real jerks in the world.
Well, again, getting back to some people are horseradish.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think you're correct about that. Are you building something now?
I actually am. I've got two builds going. Two friends of mine, actually. I'm building a mini style acoustic guitar for one gentleman, and the other one I'm building a Les Paul style guitar for.
Yeah.
So a lot of fun here in Cobb Guitars and, you know, just doing setups. And I've had a lot of bass guitars recently for setups, which is cool.
Oh yeah. I mean, playing a lot of bass in my life, you know, generally bass guitars get overlooked as far as being set up correctly. I mean,
and a badly set up bass is about as bad as it gets.
It does. And I've had and then this goes back to thick necks too, but yeah, I've spent a lot of time playing P basses who are notorious for having thick necks.
Sure.
And when you move to something like a jazz bass, it's like, wow, this neck, you know, is totally different. But
right.
But I think a good sit up on a P bass, even with a thick neck, makes it all the difference in the world.
I wish I would have had the guitars that I've let go of in the past that I thought just were not right because of a simple setup issue.
Sure.
And that's the one thing I always encourage my customers. It's like, listen, if you have a guitar and you ain't quite vibing with it, don't sell it. Bring it to me. Let's do a simple setup to it because right. It may be the one for you.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, setup is, I played with the guy that I use on the road for like 10 years, and my guitars always work well when I play with him because he would tweak them almost per job, you know?
And every customer is different too. I mean, if you're a shred guy, if you're, you know, a metal guy and you like really low action, well, there's certain things you've got to have for that. Or you may be a bluegrass guy who likes high action and want to punish yourself.
Sure. Yeah. I think they have to punish themselves. They play bluegrass.
Absolutely.
I can say that too, because I've been the upright bass player in a lot of bluegrass bands, but
yeah. Well, I love bluegrass music as much as the next man. I'm a big Tony Rice fan. He's one of my biggest influences.
Sure.
But when I've played about 5 bluegrass songs, I've pretty much done the whole repertoire in my mind.
Well, you know, I grew up wanting to be a blues player, particularly because it's the only music I could get as a kid. And I wanted to be a blues harmonica player more than anything in the world, that and Tarzan. Huh? And I got to be it. And, you know, it's like bluegrass. You know, it's the same song, just in a different key over and over and over.
Yeah, that's why most players that tend to gravitate towards like jazz fusion, sure. You know, that kind of thing when they've been a blues player for about 10 years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm an absolute love blues. I'm not mocking or anything disrespectful whatsoever.
I've played a ton of them, and I've worked as a harmonica player doing that, which was my dream. But there again, as you develop as a person, you realize 3 chords is pretty limiting.
It is. And also the more interesting, more spicier guys tend to add something else in there.
True, they do.
But there is a certain raw power about blues and stuff like that that you have to appreciate. I mean, when you see Buddy Guy up there sweating, you know, strangling a note to death, sounds like a cat getting put in a blender.
Sure.
There's a certain power to that. That say someone like an Yngwie Malmsteen,
right?
Just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's all subjective. But
well, you take a guy like Buddy Guy, and almost half of his notes are just about sharp or flat, but they work. I mean, he gets it bent just enough, you know, which is a beautiful part of music. It doesn't have to be exactly the right note or just right to be fabulous.
Yeah, there's a breed of player nowadays that sort of befuddles me in a way, if that's a word. They are technically as fast and sharp as anyone of our heroes ever dreamed of being, but at the same time, there's something lost to my ear, being a, you know, an old goofball.
Right.
So I get it. Like, I mean, I would sometimes prefer that mistakes and things like that to get some feeling across versus a guy that can play 8,000 notes in a row with no problem whatsoever. It's technically as sharp as a razor.
Sure.
That to me seems sort of robotic in a way.
Well, it kind of is. Now, you take a guy like Derek,
mm-hmm.
because he's had a really good jazz background, you know, he can make that stuff that he does, which is when he plays with his Derek McCoy trio. Is,
oh, 100%.
You know, I mean, he stretches the boundaries of some stuff, and it works.
Right.
But there again, you know, you could make that boring. You could make what he does boring if you, you know. I could see where it could get more.
Oh yeah, he does wonderful. Just when he plays jazz, it feels real. When he plays blues, it's real. When he plays bluegrass, it's real. And I think it really goes down to just your love of music.
I think it
does. Derek loves, and any musician that loves music, it's their life, you're going to get good at it.
True. You are.
You know, I see guys online that can take a yo-yo and do things that look holographic. Yeah. Now, I don't want to spend 30 years trying to figure out a yo-yo, right. But you have to appreciate the what they're doing.
Sure. Oh, yeah, you do.
Like, I think, too, it's often you can often fall in the trap of being too critical of the really good guys, the technical guys. And I don't do that either because I know the work they've put in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that. Even Jeff Beck sometimes got boring to me. But,
100%. But absolutely.
But I will tell you, Jeff Beck was fabulous, you know?
Oh, he was a legend for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that comes down, that's subjected to taste some, you know.
Well, I always say this, look, I can't stand rap music.
Right.
You couldn't strap me to a chair and make me listen to it. However, right. I will appreciate that a guy can say 100 words in 30 seconds.
Sure.
And sort of have, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's something, they obviously practice that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that would take a lot of practice, really, to get those words to flow.
I mean, I stutter and stammer and often use words out of context, and I couldn't imagine trying to say 100 words in 10 seconds, you know?
Listen, sometimes I can't even sing the songs of my own songs that I'm doing and remember them, much less, you know, and trust me, they're not as wordy as any rap song in the world, you know? I mean...
Yeah, I'm just not that talented on that kind of thing.
No, I think that's a... I do think you have an aptitude to do that. Those people that do that,
yes.
I mean, yes. Not only do you have a good memory, and I don't know how often, because I don't know rappers very well, but I don't know how much of that is ad lib or how much of it is just general memorization. But either if
I couldn't see someone writing all that stuff down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then getting it all in the correct rhythm. I mean,
yeah, thank you. Yeah, I can't do that.
I can, you know, that's my argument sometimes when people say, well, rap, well, I don't like it, but I can see the complexity of it. After being a singer, just trying to get words to match up, you know, much less that many of them. And you know, I wish I really knew if you can ad lib some of that stuff, you would be a genius. You know,
Derek and I, Derek and I have had so many conversations, but one that's always funny, he's a big Alan Holdsworth fan.
Yeah.
And Holdsworth, you know, a legendary guitar player, has inspired so many people
right. And
things like that. And I have tried many times, and this is going to be sacrilege to maybe some of your audience, maybe you, but I feel the same way about the Beatles. Because I have people in my life that I love who are Beatle fanatics.
Right.
I have tried so many times to like them. I want to be in the cool guy club, but for some reason, it just does not resonate with me. Like, I hear it and it just doesn't move me. Now, again, I recognize that they're legends. I love, you know, love that aspect. I would never mock them, but I've tried.
Well, here's been my thing, because I grew up right when it was happening, is
sure.
I'm a Stones guy.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, would I tell you that their music is as sophisticated as the Beatles? No, man.
No.
I mean,
no way.
But that's rock and roll. You know, the Beatles almost fall in a pop
yes.
deal. You know, I mean, the Stones, there's no way around that being rock and roll.
There's something to be said about when you and I are long gone, Keith Richards will still be somewhere squeaking on a five-string telly.
True, he will. He will. Which, it took me a while to figure that out, too. I finally did figure it out before I ever was able to read it and all, that there could not be a six-string on his Telecaster. I knew there couldn't be.
No, yeah. He does what works for him and the other guy that plays with him, and
yeah.
And they make great music.
They do. And actually, they play, you know, I would tell you that then this is another thing, too. You take someone like Keith Richard. He's not the greatest lead player in the world.
No, not at all.
But he does have probably the most recognizable and rememberable lines in all of music. I mean, the beginning of Honky Tonk Women.
Oh, man.
You know, it's that interesting, it's that beginning lick or start me up. You know, I mean, it's stuff like, yeah, he can't shred, but he also can come up with these signature licks that make a whole song, the whole song.
Oh, and that is more, it take, and this is, again, another controversial take, it takes more to come up with a memorable, simple riff than it does to play, say, an exercise that you can grease up with a metronome and get up to 8,000 beats per minute. You know, Tom Petty once said, someone came up to him and they said, man, everything you write is so easy. He said, really? He was like, I wish I knew that because it seems to take me a lot to do it. But you're the 99% of your audience is coming to watch you play a gig. They don't give a daggum about a sweep arpeggio.
No,
or
they don't.
4/5/7 this, all that.
Nope.
You could set me up in a booth playing some crazy stuff, and I'll get one or two people come by. But if you put Taylor Swift out there playing three chords, she's going to have trillions more than I am, I assure you.
Well, if you put me out there with Mike Campbell, I'm a lot better than you know, like Tom Petty. You know what I mean? My backing people can be, and I always try to play with better musicians than myself. I mean,
yes, Lord, yes.
You know, you sound really good tonight. Well, guess what? Derek McCoy's my guitar player. You know, I mean,
you can't sound bad with Derek McCoy as your guitar player or Jacob Tremblay.
No,
you can't sound bad.
Nope. And that's one of those things that I always try to tell people. If I sound good, it's because I've surrounded myself with people to make me sound good.
100%. You're only as good as the weakest link in your band.
True.
And, you know, where would Van Halen be without Michael Anthony?
Oh, I agree, totally. You know? Well, you know, and I look at, you take someone like AC/DC, you know.
Oh, 100%.
It's the rhythm that makes it all go, you know.
I always giggle when people tell me AC/DC is simple. I'm like, oh, really?
No, it's not. And yeah, I mean, it is, but it's not, you know.
Right. Go start an AC/DC tribute band, and I will guarantee you, you ain't going to sound unlike AC/DC.
No, you're not. You're not. And, well, you know how many Skynyrd tribute bands I've heard?
Oh, geez.
And they're not, you know.
No, you can't be. And that's the same with so many people tried to copy Stevie Ray Vaughan, but they missed what made Stevie Ray Vaughan Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I agree. I mean, I totally agree. Because I think there are two bands, and this is going to get me in trouble, but there's a band near me out of Spartanburg who was famous, and they still play, but they're a bad tribute band to themselves.
Oh, yes. Now, there is something to be said about that, too, learning when to park the tour bus.
Exactly. Well, and I think Skynyrd, I will just tell you that, they're a bad tribute band to themselves now, too.
It's sad. It really is sad when you watch your heroes. You know, when Neil Peart died, the drummer of Rush, I think he's one of the cases where a guy stopped when he knew that he couldn't give it his best.
Right, and I think there's a lot to be said for that.
It really is, because once you get to a stage where it ain't happening no more, and I mean, I won't name names, but there are many bands now that I grew up adoring to where I hear them now when they're live and I go, this is a mockery of what put out.
Oh, well, I mean, I was just talking about Marshall Tucker, but that's the, you know,
sure.
Marshall Tucker should have let it go four band members deaths ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I understand being a singer and have to make a living, but.
Yeah.
And I know you can write a name, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure. And it's unfortunate reality, and I hate to see my heroes get old.
I do too. Oh, I really do, and see them when they're not at their best. You know, I've seen them. There's a time. There comes a time, and I know that you have to make a living at this. But some of these people have made a really fine and good living and don't have to do it. And I know you're still drawn to music. You know. So it's
there are guys that defy the age. I mean, David Gilmour is still on top of his game.
I agree.
It's unreal. I mean, when I'm 80, well, first, I'll be lucky to make it to 80. But when I do get there, I assure you I ain't going to be playing much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm 72 now, and I play, but I don't play near as much as I used to. And I'm playing all I want to, which is, you know, a couple times a month.
Right.
Well, I mean, I there comes a point to where you just have to say, nah. Oh, I have a handle that I use for myself a lot. I call myself used to be, you know.
I'm a huge mixed martial arts fan. I love the UFC and Muay Thai and all that stuff. And there's a tragic tale of fighters who should have retired earlier. Yeah.
Oh, I agree.
And they will always think they have it until, you know, the guy that's 10 years younger plants them.
Sure.
And it's the same with musicians. I mean, listen, you do what makes you happy, but at the same time, I mean, I think the people that love you and surround you should also be honest with you.
Yep. Although, I am interested in seeing, since we're on that, I am interesting to see what's going to happen with Jake Paul.
And Mike Tyson?
Yes. I mean, Mike shouldn't be in the ring, no doubt.
No, if you watch his training footage, Mike is 50-something years old, and a lot of times he walks with a cane.
Yeah.
And listen, I can't hate on Jake Paul. He's making his money.
He is.
And he's fighting guys that he knows
he can beat.
he has an upper hand on. But at the same time, if I were Mike Tyson's surrounding people, I would have an agreement with Jake Paul, like, listen, kind of go easy.
Yeah,
this sort of a thing, you know, because I would hate to see a legend like Tyson get, you know, brutalized, you know.
And by the same token, I would be telling Jake, all that being said, brother, you better look out, because he's still, if he hits you really hard, you might be in trouble, you know.
Power is the last thing that goes, my friend.
There you go. And he, from the training videos, he looks like he still has some power.
Oh, well, he'll always be a bruiser. So, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't even want to get hit by the ring girls.
No, me either. No, I spent a lot of time doing that in my life, and things that hurt at 20s and 20s are hurt way worse in your 50s.
100%. I don't heal the way I used to, and I want to keep my hands intact to build guitars.
true. And it does beat your hands up without a doubt. I mean, I know boxers with some gnarly hands. So,
For sure.
But this has been fun, Brody. What else do we need to know?
Well, again, you can contact me through my Facebook page, Brody, B-R-O-D-Y, Cobb, C-O-B-B. That's where you can find me at. I put all my builds on there. I'm also somewhat of a goofball. I have a lot of fun on Facebook, all funny stuff. And you can contact me directly there, through there. And if I can ever help anybody, you know, fix their guitar or set it up, and anyone is always welcome at my shop. And we'll treat you like family.
What about, how long is a turnaround? Say if I get you to build me a guitar, let's make it easier. Electric guitar, what's kind of a turnaround, or how, you know?
Usually about a month and a half. Yeah. Repairs are even, like, most of the time when I get my customers to come here, I say, hey, come when you can stay for about 30, 45 minutes and sit here with me. We'll shoot the breeze, cut up. I'll do the work in front of you. And that way you don't have to make two trips.
Oh yeah. That's wonderful when you can do that. That is,
yeah.
I mean, that's a selling service right there.
Oh yeah. 100%. Because listen, we're all musicians, and most of the musicians I know are working class men and women.
Right.
They can't afford to put, you know, $40 in gas to just go get a guitar.
Well,
repaired.
Not only that, it kind of freaks you out when you leave a guitar there and you think, well, is this going to be a month?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
when I hear horror stories about people tell me, man, this guy had my guitar for 6 months, I cringe.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, no way.
I do, too. And it's like, I've even heard of guys who, I know one personally, where the shop got shut down and all the equipment was there, you know? And it's an IRS type thing where the IRS had every guitar that was in there, you know?
That's horrifying.
Or, you know, or a tragedy like a fire, or a break in, you know, I mean,
yeah,
you know, I mean, if I got a stock Telecaster getting a sit up done and it gets nabbed or whatever, and I got, you know, if there's insurance, well, that's no big deal. I can go get another one.
Yeah.
Immediately. But when you got something that's pretty special, you kind of hate to.
Well, and again, like, I like also too building relationships with people.
Sure.
So, like I said at the beginning of the conversation, I've gained mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters through this industry. And I like to sit here, and while we work, I'll show them what I'm doing.
Yeah.
100% transparent. I just feel that that's the best business model, and I feel like I would want that done for me.
I agree totally. I mean, I think it's I hope a lot of you repairmen, builders, and all, I hope you're listening to this, because so many of you, you know, long time, long wait, you
True.
Know, so.
Well, this has been a pleasurable conversation. Yeah. I am beyond flattered and beyond blessed that you reached out to me. I've always seen your little show, and I'm always grateful when people want to hear me squeak on.
Well, you know, it's I think from your guitars that I've seen, you're a quality builder, and I like, you know, if you get one additional guitar built out of this, then I'll just be tickled to death. I mean, I think people need to, and it's the whole premise of the show, is to make people aware of the mm-hmm. people in even the smaller towns around doing world-class work that
sure.
people need to know about that. So,
I'll tell you this, it's because of people like you that I get to live my dream. So I'm eternally grateful.
Well, thank you so much. And I thank you for being a guest on here.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
All right.